You know, it is fairly rare that I'm very excited about having a guest on the program. And the guest I'm bringing on now, he's a retired professor, University of Montana Law School. He's senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute and Montana Policy Institute. He is probably the foremost expert on the planet of this state constitution convention process. And it's Rob Nadelson. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It's a great honor to be on your show, Mark.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I just think it's time to really address the myths and the deceit and the falsehoods and whatever we want to call them, people who attack this constitutional process that the framers gave us. I've had enough of it. I've heard about it. I've read about it. I've now written about it. I want you to explain to us just very briefly, and I want people to understand this won't cover the whole waterfront, but it'll cover enough, just the basics of how this state convention or amendments convention process works.
Sure. The founders had a long experience of conventions among the states. The states would send representatives. They would be given an assigned job to do. They would make a proposal. They would go home. And so when the Constitutional Convention was considering how to amend the instrument, as you have pointed out in your show, George Mason said we need a way to get a procedure for having a proposed amendment bypassing Congress, because Congress could become abusive or exceed its power. And the other founders agreed, and they wrote this into the Constitution. And basically, what it provides for is that two-thirds of the state legislatures, that's now 34 state legislatures, pass resolutions directing Congress. They're called applications, but they're mandatory. Directing Congress to call it what the Constitution calls a convention for proposing an amendment. And they specify, in general, what kind of amendment they want. Congress calls the convention. It specifies the place and time. It states the purpose of the convention.
And then that's it. Congress is done, correct?
That's right. Well, that's right. Congress's role is, and you use this term in your book, ministerial. That's exactly right. And then the states come together. Each state legislature appoints its delegates, and those delegates meet in the place of the convention. They vote one state, one vote, and they decide whether to propose an amendment based on their agenda. And then if they do, then the amendment goes through the same ratification process any other amendment goes through.
Well, where did this notion of a runaway state convention process come from, which is repeated endlessly now?
You know, that is a very good question. One of the things I do is I track down constitutional myths, and this one is a classic. It was first mentioned in the 19th century, about a century after the founders. But it really got a lot of publicity in the 1960s, 1970s from left-wing sources. In other words, people who were arguing against an amendment to rein in the Supreme Court or arguing against an amendment for a balanced budget. People like Arthur Goldberg and Richard Rovere of The New Yorker, Charles Black of Yale Law School. These were all left-wing folks. But it's one of the great ironies of history that some groups on the right have, you know, not knowing where these arguments came from, have picked them up and have now used them as reasons for opposing an amendments convention.
And how could you even have a runaway convention if the state legislatures are appointing the delegates with a specific subject in mind and sending them there, and they have the power to pull them back, and ultimately the several states have the power to ratify or not? How does this become a runaway?
Well, it really can't. I mean, we have a runaway Congress, okay? That's the reality.
Exactly.
The runaway convention stuff is a myth. But part of it is misunderstanding. I mean, they don't understand that these delegations are appointed by the state legislatures. They don't understand the state legislatures can pull them back. I think that some of them have the vision, and this is, you know, this was widely shared at one time, the vision that that a convention for proposing amendments is some massive national assembly elected by popular vote around the country and can be stampeded. But that's not the way it was set up at all. The founding era record makes that very clear.
What about people who say Well, yeah, well, that's all great. But, you know, they met in Philadelphia to amend the Articles of Confederation. And what they did instead is they threw them out and they replaced it with a constitution. That's an example of a runaway convention. Now, I know what you say, but how would you answer that?
Well, I'd answer it actually the same way you did the other night. And that is to point out that, number one, contrary to mythology, Congress did not call the Constitutional Convention. The Constitutional Convention was called at the recommendation of a convention that occurred the previous year, and it was called specifically by resolutions from Virginia and New Jersey. It was called outside the Articles of Confederation. That's why it wasn't bound by the Articles of Confederation. The delegates were duly appointed by the state legislatures, with one exception. And that person was appointed pursuant to a resolution of the state legislature, and they got together in Philadelphia. And when they were commissioned, when they were given their instructions, they were given documents, and those documents told them what they could and could not do. Congress passed a resolution, but Congress really had nothing to say in the matter. It was the states that commissioned their delegates, and if you look at the commissions, you find out that of the 12 states that participated, 10 of them sent commissions that were broad enough to go beyond amending the Articles of Confederation, and most of the delegates from the two states that didn't have that authority didn't sign the Constitution. So it was a convention given a responsibility to recommend an entirely new political system, and that's what they did. These were men of honor. And frankly, this smear against the founders that they exceeded their authority has gone on for too long.
That's gone on for too long. This stuff about how you and I and others, we pretend we're smarter than James Madison and Benjamin Franklin and George Mason. We do no such thing. We're looking at history. We're looking at scholarship, much of which is yours. We're looking at the Constitution itself. Did they not write these words? Did you write them or did I write them?
The founders wrote them. I mean, the founders wrote Article 5, and they intended us to use that route for precisely this situation. I mean, an abusive runaway Congress was something that they feared, and so they wrote into the Constitution precisely this mechanism for dealing with it. The other thing that's important to remember, Marcus, we don't have to be James Madison's here, because this isn't a constitutional convention. We're not trying to write a whole new constitution.
Right.
What's going on is that delegates from the state legislature will be charged with the responsibility of writing one or more amendments as proposals, period. And then those proposals will go to the states for consideration.
And yet, it's interesting because some of my fellow conservatives, not a lot, by the way, so far, but some of my fellow conservatives say, don't you believe in the Constitution? I mean, what are you trying to change? And I'm thinking here to myself, we have the Supreme Court that meets. It's a runaway constitutional convention there. We have Congress passing these laws that are not constitutional, like Obamacare, and the president signing them. We have all kinds of stuff going on in the federal government. They are defending that. They are defending the status quo, as far as I'm concerned, Rob Nadelson. They are not defending the Constitution.
That's right. They're not. They think they are, but if you read the writings of some of these people, they're actually very critical. For example, they basically say the Constitution was illegally adopted by a runaway convention. Some of them look at Article 5 and they say, gee, why is Article 5, there's so much there that isn't explained. How do we know what the founders meant? Well, if you take the time to go back and look at the history that the founders were dealing with, and the fact that many of these people at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia were old convention hands themselves. Roger Sherman, for example, was in his fifth convention. He knew how they worked, and they didn't have to itemize everything in Article 5. They kept it short the way they kept the rest of the Constitution short.
Now, you point out in a response today, in an excellent piece of The American Thinker, if you want to see it, folks, it's on my social sites, Mark Levin Show Facebook, Mark Levin Show Twitter, as well as MarkLevinShow.com. We got a lot of Mark Levin Show stuff going on here, Professor. But in any event, you even said there was a dry run once.
That's right. This is an extraordinary story that very few people know about. But when the Civil War threatened and seven states had already seceded, the Commonwealth of Virginia, which did not want to secede, said, let's see if we can call together a convention of the states in order to come up with a compromise constitutional amendment to prevent this incipient calamity. And it was very widely accepted as an idea. It was not an Article 5 convention, but because it didn't submit its proposal to the states, and it wasn't called under the two-thirds applications, but it was a convention of the states, and they came up with a constitutional amendment, which they presented to Congress, and of course Congress did nothing. But what's important here is that this convention was exactly like an Article 5 convention in all of its procedures. One state, one vote. The convention chooses its own officers, elects, adopts its own rules. They go through the debates. They follow the same procedures that they followed during the founding era. And when the whole thing was over, and it was over in less than a month, they presented an amendment that may very well have, number one, headed off the Civil War, and number two, put slavery on the road to extinction. So it was a successful convention. Of course, Congress, as has often happened, was deadlocked and did nothing to deal with the crisis.
And you know, it's interesting, you're not really involved in this. I came up with what I suggested are my reform amendments. And obviously, a convention will do whatever it wants. But I'm putting them out there as examples of what I personally think would be a good way to go. So some guy who used to head Pepperdine and is over there, he writes, "And look at Levin, he seeks to be a czar." Wait a minute. I have no power to impose my will on anybody or anything. People, you know, Professor, people are not reading this stuff. They're not reading your stuff. They're not reading my book. They're not looking at the history behind the Constitution. And they're knee-jerking all over the place.
Well, we have czars, but they're not us. I mean, the czars are part of the problem, aren't they?
Exactly.
There is a group right now, and you can access it at conventionofstates.com is the address, which has a proposed application, and they want a convention that would be broad enough, as I understand it, to accommodate or to consider virtually every amendment that you propose. I think that maybe one half of one amendment would not be within the call. But if people are interested in pursuing the Mark Levin amendments, conventionofstates.com is one way to go.
God forbid. You know, no. We instead, it's better that we go on the track that we're on now. You know, you're a national treasure, Rob Nadelson. I want you to know that. And I'm going to bring you back again, if you don't mind, because I am psyched. I am ready for this fight. I want to put down all these phony myths and claims. And it's about time we bring this to the forefront. You've been working on this for a couple of decades now. You've gotten my attention. I've actually gone to a lot of these original documents on my own, as you can see from the book, and I've also gone, you know, with the amendments to original documents as well. It's time to have this fight, don't you think?
You betcha. You betcha. Keep
well, let me
fight,
tell
Mark.
You. God bless you. God bless you. You've done a magnificent job, and your time has come.
Thank you, sir, and you do a great job as well.
All right, thank you. You take care of yourself. I hope. Mr. Producer, let's put this in the best of. Can we do that? I mean, this is very, very important. Doesn't have to be in the next best of, but in a best of. It's very important, folks, that you be confident in this, that you aspire toward this. Because it's not what the critics say. It's just not.